And welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of February 20th. I'm John Gibson, and with me is the Jet Setter, Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
The Jet Setter? is that at the Westminster Kennel Club? The Jet Setter? The English Setter?
Oh, that's bad.
Are you calling me a dog?
That's really bad. That's so bad. I'm going to have to put it out for the night.
Hashtag.
Way to go. So... No, I'm fine. I'm in Sapporo covering the Asian Winter Games, the 8th Asian Winter Games. Woohoo! Or is that woohoo or yahoo or something? That's the sound of unlimited joy.
No, it's not. It's like hurry up and end so you can get back to baseball. That's what I'm thinking. I don't know what you're thinking, but that's what I'm thinking.
Well, I'll tell you, snow is not my friend. Ice is not my friend. I'm up here among a lot of non-friends.
Yeah, it is for me when I'm watching it on TV.
Thank you.
All right, well, you have a good time up there in Sapporo. We're taping on a Friday, and on this week's show, we've got a trio of fighters pitchers. We're going to talk about camp a little bit, and we're going to talk about the WBC and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, I was very fortunate to be able to go to Okinawa before I went to the great White North. And Okinawa,
Japan's version of the Great White North.
Well, yes, indeed. So it's great, and it's white, and it's in the north, so I don't know why not. But I was in Okinawa for about a day and a half. And I did a couple interviews, and while I was waiting for one interview, I got a chance to talk to new Fighters pitcher Edwin Escobar, second-year Fighters pitcher Chris Martin, and fourth-year pitcher Luis Mendoza, which is close to being like a Fibonacci number if we had some other numbers.
Okay.
Okay.
But we don't, so...
We don't, so it would be 1, 2, 3. Okay, anyway. Actually, it's nothing like a Fibonacci number because it would be 1, 2, 3, 5. Okay, anyway, so I talked to those three guys, and I was curious, you know, about their various stages of preparation for life in Japan, you know, before your first season, after your first season, and after your third season. So it was all quite interesting, and I guess the one thing reference you'll hear now, what happened was I talked to those three guys because it was just, they were all finishing their workout at the same time. So it was a case of, you know, I'll take it, I'll do it. And after that, Luis Mendoza, who didn't have any other work to do, he didn't have to do his additional weight training like the other two guys.
Right.
He stuck around and we talked about the World Baseball Classic some. Now, some of you may remember in the 2013 WBC in the first round, Mexico and Canada were having a game in which Canada ran up the score.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Indeed, dropping the gloves. So anyway, the Canadians were bunting with a big lead in the ninth inning because one of the WBC tiebreakers is run differential. So the more runs you score, regardless, you know, whether you beat somebody, beating somebody 25-1 is better than beating them 24-1.
Exactly.
So the Canadians were bunting to try and score an initial run in the ninth inning, and our buddy Luis Cruz was playing third base for Mexico, and he was not amused. So he turned to the pitcher on the mound, pointed to his chest. Luis pointed to his chest, and the pitcher responded by hitting the next batter. And thus ensued, I guess, the WBC's biggest fight to date.
Yeah, this became the World Boxing Council, not the World Baseball Classic.
Indeed, it did. I've asked Edgar Gonzalez about that. You know, you're going to have some excitement if you play Canada. He said, "No, I hope not as much excitement as in 2013. We're good with the baseball." So I wanted to ask Luis about that, and you know, what's he going to do if his friend Luis Cruz points to his chest when they play Canada again, whom they could face in the second round.
Oh no.
Okay, so these two conversations were back to back, and you will hear them back to back. So let's have a listen.
Okay, today on our Japan Baseball Weekly podcast, we have a trio of Nippon Ham Fighters pitchers. New man on the block, Edwin Escobar, second-year reliever Chris Martin, and longtime do-everything man, Luis Mendoza. So thanks for joining us, guys. Chris, you're back and healthy this year?
Yeah, feel good.
Okay, now I want to ask you, this is your second year now. For your first year, you know, the first year, everything's moving really fast, and you got so many things to sort through. Coming into the second year, what did you have to sort of, you know, when things were stopped and you were thinking about what can I do better, or what maybe should I have realized last year? Anything?
I think number one this season, you know, stay healthy.
Okay.
That's the biggest thing every year, I guess. But, yeah, it's the biggest thing I was worried about coming into this year, and I knew it would be a little bit easier transition.
Okay.
Knowing what's to come. You know, I mean, coming to Okinawa, come to a foreign country that you've never been to, so should be a fun year this year.
Okay. And now, what's when Edwin came in, did you give him a little advice or kid him about something, or watch out for this?
I don't know exactly what I told him, but he had a lot of questions. I think he asked more questions than I did at the beginning, so that's good. He's asking questions, and I think it'll help him in the long run, knowing what's coming.
Okay, now I'm gonna save you for a second here, Luis. Now, when you you've been here a long time. When you see a new guy here, what's the first thing you want to tell him?
The first thing, well,
don't listen to
I'm glad he speaks Spanish first. You know?
Okay. Yeah.
So somebody to speak Spanish, but no, yeah. Just that it's gonna be easy just to get used to the new culture, uh-huh. You know. And
it's gonna be easy.
It's gonna be easy. It's not gonna be hard. I mean, especially when we have Chris here, Brandon, and myself. Like we've been here like more than 1 year, 2 years.
Sure.
So he's gonna we're gonna tell him good advice.
I think for a lot of the Latin players, the adjustment to Japan is in one way a little easier because you played baseball in foreign countries and you're used to making that adjustment to foreign languages, foreign countries. So now, what are you looking forward to in for Edwin Escobar? What are you looking forward to in this challenge with Nippon Ham?
I think my biggest state of this new experience is gonna be being healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Do the best I can to support my teammates. Do the best I can to, I mean, get a championship back, and everything I can do in my hands, I'm gonna be able to do.
Okay, so now that's fine, and that's a good start.
Absolutely.
I know, and stay healthy. Yeah, that's such a huge thing, and I know it's always a challenge because you know you guys play baseball your whole lives, and then you come to Japan where they do everything a little differently, and they tell you the reasons, and maybe sometimes the reasons don't make sense. So, coming out of that first year, and maybe looking back to come to your first year, you know, what did you think? Oh man, I could have done that better. Anything?
Well, probably prepare myself better in the off season.
Oh, the first year.
Yeah, first year, because you don't have idea how hard they work. You know, like every day is the same things. You know, like running, abs every day, and a long time on the field. So
yeah,
just be prepared for that.
Yeah, I think probably your agent told you. You know, get your bring your well. Usually, everyone tells me, and I heard you heard this too. Bring your running shoes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, bring your running shoes to camp.
Yeah. So I mean, so far it's been great.
Okay.
It's baseball, you know.
It's baseball, right? Yeah.
I think the biggest thing, you know, accept the culture and accept the way they play the game. That was the hardest thing for me at the beginning. They do a lot of things. You scratch your head, but you know, once you kind of give into it all, and just let it be, and just focus on what you need to do, and that's I think the big thing that you gotta focus on when you're over
yeah,
here.
That's so hard because your natural instinct is to do baseball do your life the way your life is.
Right.
And they're telling you, no, your life ain't like that. It's in one sense, it's a little bit like going to prison. Your life ain't what it used to be. I mean, I hate to say that. But you guys don't want to say that, so I'll say it. But it is like that when you come to Japan. Everyone's telling you that you ain't in America. You ain't you're not in Venezuela anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the way Japan is, you know.
It is.
I mean, if like Chris said, if you just take it easy and do what they tell you to do, I mean, you're gonna be okay.
So, but this, you guys have been lucky. This is a really good organization you landed with, and great to come in.
You see stuff with some other organizations. I'm not saying anything bad about them with other foreign guys, and you're just like, man, you know, they got like 10 at bats and they got one hit, and they just go, all right, next.
Yeah.
You know, here it's a lot different. They give you a chance, and they believe in you here, so that's really good that they do that.
Yeah, it is, and obviously Brandon's a huge example of that. You know, he came in and really had really struggled his first half of the year, and he came back and they signed him and won a home run title and was big. And, I mean, you guys, I mean, it's a shame that Chris wasn't here for the Japan series, because I probably should have been had things gone better in the rehab.
Yeah.
Was it kind of the most disappointing thing from last year?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, you know, I went home too to get healthy, and you know, I couldn't watch the games, and you know, I was waiting for a message from Ipe or something to see what happened, and actually it was just it sucked actually. But you know, we'll do it again this year. I have a good feeling. We got a really good team this year, and I think we'll be right back in the same position, so looking forward to get working on that.
So absolutely. Have you won a championship before?
Yeah, I do. It was 2014 with Pawtucket Red Sox, AAA.
Okay.
And I think we want to do the same here.
Absolutely.
And
you haven't had much of an exposure to the Japanese fans yet, but that's going to be an eye-opener, I think, when this camp.
Every game in the season feels like it's the last game of the World Series. that's how they play it, too. Pitching, you know, you're in there. If you're doing well, you're in there, so... It's definitely an adjustment. So,
okay. So we wish you well as you go into the season, Mr. Escobar.
Thank you.
And good luck. Stay healthy.
Yeah,
and Chris, stay healthy. Get your work done. I'm going to bother this guy for a few more minutes. So, okay. Take care, guys. Thank you much. You're not going to pitch either? Yeah, you're the Otani. They're going to save you for the bat.
They saved me for Japan, the last round in LA. No, I'm just
kidding. Well, how cool would that be?
Oh, that'd be cool to face a Japan team.
Oh,
that'd be nice. That'd be weird a little bit, you know, like,
yeah.
I faced all these guys during the last 3 years and then face them in a tournament like the WBC. That'd be very, very nice, very cool.
Did you see any of Otani's bats against Mexico or the Netherlands?
Yeah.
Of course, they were kind of everywhere on the internet.
everywhere, and... like the Team Mexico came to Japan, you know, Tokyo Dome, and everybody, you know, like was impressed with Otani's swings and a bomb he hit the roof of Tokyo Dome.
Yeah,
so,
right, went into the ceiling.
Yeah, so everybody's impressed, and he's very young, and that's the impressive thing about him.
Yeah, 22 years old.
22 years old.
He's got that swing, yeah. So probably this is going to be your last year as his teammate, unless you go back to the majors.
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully, but yeah, anything, you know, go to the States, stay in Japan, you know, that'd be great.
Now, this is going to be your fifth year?
Fourth year, yeah.
I don't mean to say like you've been here too long. You've been here a while.
So. That'd be great if it's my fifth year. So.
It must be kind of, you know, well, how do you feel, you know, coming in for 4 years? Were you ever with one professional team for 4 years before?
In minor leagues, you know, like with the Red Sox, I think I spent like 6 years with them.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the longest, but it's not the same. I'm, of course, here being in the big team and, you know, like in the competition at this level, you know, it's something else. That'd be the longest I've ever been, you know, with a team.
Kind of blessed.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And how your family likes it in Japan?
Oh, great, yeah. I mean, first year, you know, struggled a little bit with the food, language, you know, like, but after the first half, you know, like, everything started going good, you know, like, of course, we got our interpreters, and they've been great with us, and, you know, they help us a lot, so that's a huge, huge help for us, you know.
Okay. Did you, I don't know, do you ever pull practical jokes, or... Is that your nature?
My nature.
do you ever like to do practical jokes like on your teammates, like tell them something?
Yeah, of course. You know,
okay,
like
you got to have one in mind for Edwin Escobar.
Yeah, let's right now thinking one. But
you have to think about one.
I have to think
because
about
it's so easy in Japan. You can just say and watch out for this.
Yes. So
Okay.
I got him. I'm going to get him.
You're going to get him. Okay, now I guess I'm going to go back to WBC a little bit, obviously. Now, when Edgar asked you to pitch, mm-hmm. what was your first response?
Well, just to see my name in the roster, you know. Of course, everybody wants to represent his country, you know, like in any tournament.
Sure.
But definitely the WBC is the, for me, is the most important tournament, you know, in the world. You're facing the best players of the world, and that's nice to face the guys you admire, you know, like you've been watching playing, and that's gonna be the most fun part of this tournament. Okay.
So let me just now, if you guys get to the second round and you're pitching against Canada, and Luis does this. What are you going to
do? No, man.
Forget it, man. We've done that before.
Yeah.
3 points to his chest like he did against Canada.
No, we learned about that, you know. I mean, you know, the pitcher was a young pitcher, Arnold Leon, and, I mean, he just did what the crew said, you know. But, I mean, that was just part of the game, you know.
Okay.
Of course, you know, like late innings, you know, too many runs, but they didn't know the importance of the runs in the tournament,
right.
So that's why Canada was
the tiebreaker.
Yeah, so they were bunting and playing their game, you know, so just part of the game.
It's easier to bunt when you got hockey sticks, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so you're looking forward to that. You guys got a great, I'll tell you, all the WBC teams are, except for Japan, are so much better. Than they were 4 years ago.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I mean,
yeah.
More and more, you guys got more and more big names on your team.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, with Brandon coming along, that's big for you guys. And
yeah, I think Japan was the who provoked this the other teams get better, you know, like because, you know, two straight championships and everybody was like, okay, wait a minute, I mean, we have to start calling the big names and the players here. Ask them to play, you know, and get ready before spring training. That's the tough part, you know, to call it and say, hey, off season's over, try to get ready for the WBC.
Is Edgar pretty persuasive? He seems very laid back and casual, but he's also kind of intense. You know?
Yeah, he's, how to say it, he take it really serious, you know, like,
it's really personal for him.
Yeah, and he likes to compete, you know, and that's a good thing, you know, like, that's why this year he did his best to put everybody together, you know, and ask him to play, so he accomplished that, so that's pretty good, you know. I can't wait to see my teammates.
When do you go to camp?
I don't have the date yet, you know. They want me to get ready here for games before I leave, so but I'm just waiting, you know, like getting ready. My main thing right now is to try to build pitches, you know, like get to 50, 60 pitches, and from
how long
there.
How long is your bullpen today? It's pretty long.
Yeah, 51 pitches.
Wow.
My four bullpen, and feel pretty good, you know.
Okay,
so
well,
far.
You feel good now.
Yeah, I feel good
now. See how you feel.
Let's see tomorrow. Well, no, we're feeling good.
Okay, well, anyway, so thanks very much for taking your time.
You're welcome.
And best of luck in the WBC. Hopefully we'll see you. I won't see you in Atlanta going, but hopefully you'll make it and get to pitch against Japan in the semifinals or the final.
That would be great.
Would be awesome.
Oh, awesome.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Good luck, man.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay, well, thanks, guys. Real treat to meet you. And I promise, Edwin, you will not hear me call you Garcia this year.
Yeah.
But you have license for as long as you're in Japan to give me a bad time about it, because I mistakenly thought his name was Garcia for a second.
Oh, well, don't worry about it. It happens to the best of us and the worst of us.
It happens to me all the time. So it's not new. So the fighter's interpreter was going, hey, Garcia.
Right.
Garcia, right?
He's teasing you. Huh? All right.
He was indeed. Ipe, well, you got licensed too.
Well, look at it this way. You won't forget his name anytime soon, for sure. Huh? Whose name? He says.
Okay, Bob.
Well, thank you guys. I'm glad you were able to go to actually take a trip and go to camp, you know, experience it at least a little bit for me. I'm sure you probably set 5 minutes aside to go and just take a deep breath of that clean, fresh air in Okinawa.
No, well, it was cool, though.
And
you know, it was about It was about 16 degrees in Okinawa. I had my coat on from Tokyo and I kept it on.
Yeah, it's not all that. That's why I always complain. Although it's starting to get warm. I don't know if this is real or fake, but it's starting to get a little bit warm in Tokyo. So that's happy. But anyway, first of all, I do have to say, I think you did a good job working a three-man weave there in the interview, because it's kind of difficult when you've got three people with varying English speaking abilities you're trying to work into a conversation. And you had a guy who's probably relatively quiet in English in Escobar, and a guy who's pretty fluent in Mendoza, but obviously not a native speaker. And then you've got a native speaker in Chris Martin. So you had to give each guy time to say his piece. And I think that's a difficult situation to manage. I thought you did a good job in that respect.
Well, I appreciate that. When I listen to it, I think, oh my gosh, that was awkward. It was awkward. You know, it was quite awkward. But I enjoyed it still. And I thought everybody, they were all three of them, really good sports about it being awkward.
Yeah, I think, well, obviously with Escobar, you know, when you're speaking, I'm sure you experienced this, right? Speaking Japanese in front of another non-native Japanese speaking person, you kind of go into a shell if their Japanese is better than yours. That happens to me, and I'm sure it happens to a lot of speakers. So it makes it difficult for Escobar to really express himself. And he stopped, it seemed like, mid-sentence in that one explanation. But I think that was just shyness in a different language, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he was a very friendly, affable guy, which I guess is redundant. But he's a very, he was talkative and I think expressive, and he was very happy to be there. So it was just a language thing. And it was pretty much awkward from the word go, but I really appreciated them all sitting down and putting up with me.
Yeah. So more than any one comment in particular for me, I think I came away from the whole chat thinking, what a great reputation the fighters are building and have built with their foreign players. Because maybe it goes back further than this, but it seems like the days of guys like Termell Sledge and Micah Hoffpower, whom they kept them on the roster, but you might have viewed them, you might have viewed that move as maybe a kind of, they kept those guys around a little bit longer than maybe they had to, even especially since they were foreign players and they weren't playing a lot.
Right.
Especially Hoffpower. He didn't, it seemed like the last couple of years of his stay in Japan, he just didn't really get a lot of time on the field, didn't get a lot of at-bats, but he was on the top team most of the time. He was there at the park all the time, and he was working out, and he got his swings.
He got his swings, but he also didn't get a lot of information about, you know, he was in the lineup, he was out of the lineup. It was very hard for him.
But he was there, is my point. And it's not, they didn't get rid of him. And they did give him more than, you know, as Chris was saying, you know, and we have already talked to Matt Clark, and I can, we can safely say that he was one of those guys Chris might have been referring to, and that he got 10 at bats and then we never saw him again. That whole situation there, it seems like with Brandon Laird, his first year, you referenced it in the chat. He did not start out well. He played pretty good defense, but you know, the stick wasn't doing very much, and yet they didn't give up on him, and they kept telling him, hey, we believe in you and we think you can do the job, and that's why we brought you here. And eventually he clued in and clicked in and locked on, and they won a Japan series in part because of his contributions. So I thought that was the first thing that stuck out to me. The second thing was, I think with Chris saying, and I think him pointing to, well, just talking about the fact that the imports are expected to produce that they don't get a lot of time to wallow, you either get the job done or you're gone, because he says it's like the last game of the World Series every day.
I mean, the origin of that was the fans, but there's also that thing about Japan. It's like every game, it's hard to say every game gets blown out of proportion, because every game's important. I mean, before it starts, every game's really important.
Definitely. And,
but in Japan, sometimes, you know, it's sort of like after the game's over, well, he lost the last game for us. How can we trust him? You know, he failed to get a hit with two strikes and two outs with the winning run on third base. How can we trust him in the future? This happened yesterday, you know. So it's the phenomenon that the thing that happened last is the most important.
Yeah, yeah.
And
no.
So, no, I'm just saying that is in Japan. One thing is that opening day is the center of the universe, although becoming less and less so. You even have managers now who say, well, yeah, but it's only opening day. I mean, 20 years ago, boy, if you said it's only opening day, the media would crucify you for taking it lightly.
Yeah, I think there'd be headlines that saying so. Like, you know, this guy can't manage a team. He doesn't know the importance of opening day.
He doesn't know that opening day is, in fact, worth 162 wins.
Even though they don't play that many games.
Exactly.
In Japan.
Or 130 wins, you know, because as we know, having worked for the Yomiuri, that opening day determines how you will do the rest of the year.
Of course, of course. Yeah, it is a big joke. But, you know, him saying that they act like there's no tomorrow, and they're right, because you're not at tomorrow yet. You know, you get to tomorrow the next day. And you got to go out and win those games, and they are important.
True.
So I kind of understand that. And then with Edwin Escobar, I was thinking when I heard him say, well, my plan is to stay healthy. And I'm like, right, because that was my plan so I could keep running marathons, you know.
Yeah.
Stay healthy. I can control that.
How'd that work? Yeah, I know. I know. Well, that's the plan. But, well, I think, we know what he meant is to do whatever you can to stay healthy. As opposed to assuming it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It ain't going to happen all on its own.
Right. It's the thing I try to tell my wife. She's like, well, why do you go and do all these workouts? I'm like, well, because I want to work out. She says, but, you keep getting injured. I say, well, that's part of not sitting on the couch all day. You know, if you're going to be active, you're going to risk getting injured. So, yeah, I think he can write that down on paper as a goal. And I obviously hope that he can pull it off. But his other goals, I think he can reach, you know, if he does stay healthy, because he's got a pair of excellent tutors right there on the pitching staff. Now, a lot of times you end up thinking, well, you know, this guy he's on my team, he's another foreigner, but he's not a pitcher. Or this guy's on my team, he's a foreigner and he's a pitcher, but he's a starter, I'm a reliever. But now he's got guys who have done both. You know, he's got a reliever and he's got Mendoza who has done both, and he can really learn from those guys in spring. I don't know when the season starts, if they're all going to be on the roster together or not. We have to wait to see what happens with all that stuff. But, you know, that those experienced guys to lean on for information, I think that's really important. And, you know, if he doesn't wear down or get injured, he seems like he's very confident. But that confidence I hear in a lot of newbies who come here and don't know how difficult it is to get the ball past these Japanese batters a lot of times. But he sounds determined.
Well, yeah, and he throws really hard. And I have a lot of faith in the fighters' scouts' ability to spot people. Obviously, they've got Matt Winters and Alan Hargesheimer have a good track record with the guys they brought in. I mean, two great guys last year. Brandon Laird the year before that. So, you know, they've done well, so you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. And I think Edwin Escobar is, like I said, he throws hard and he seems to have a good attitude. And I think it is great, you know, to have come into a situation where other foreign players are established.
Right.
Because if you come into a situation, and here's another thing, if you come into a situation where it's like everybody is, all the foreign players are new, or they're from other teams, or, you know, nobody lasts more than 2 years with the team. You think, like, you know, you don't get the benefit of that experience because they haven't really experienced it
right
with that team for a long time, that you can be established. And when I spoke to Luis and I said, you know, is this your fifth year? He says fourth, and he says, I wish it was my fifth. And you know, and he was just really satisfied with his. I mean, he has not had the easiest of roads with the fighters as a starter. He's been kind of stuck into the fourth starter role, but you know, they keep given, you know, going back to him, and he keeps stepping it up, and he was huge in the Japan series, which we didn't talk about much. I talked to him when I first saw him that day.
Oh, you and he didn't talk to him about it much.
Yeah. So we didn't talk about it on tape, but it was interesting. And the other thing about staying healthy was something Chris and I also talked about when I saw him before we taped, which was he injured his ankle fairly early into the All-Star break, after the All-Star break.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a rehab, and he came back.
Yeah, he was gone for quite a while. We were trying to figure out what was going on. I thought I heard back problems with Chris, last year. But yeah, go ahead, the ankle. Yeah,
he rolled his ankle, and it seemed to be good enough to pitch. And I saw him, he was with the team. You know, it was still not good, not perfect, but he was with the team, and he was with the team at Cebu Dome. Whereas, you know, you don't have to do anything on your ankle except climb like 200 steps.
Well, that's going straight to head, not side to side.
This is true, but still, yeah, he was kind of rolling his eyes when I mentioned that one. So, but yeah, but I think, yeah, and then what he said was accepting the culture, being prepared, accepting the way they play the game, and also with Luis, as we've heard a lot of, you know, it seems odd, but you know, there's a, you know, life is made up a lot of little things, and sometimes the food and the language are huge obstacles. Well, especially I think the food for baseball players, you know, and I tend to, you know, I know that Zealous Wheeler had a lot of trouble with the food when he arrived in Japan. And I, you know, and one can laugh at that, saying like, well, there's lots of food to eat. You know, how can that be a problem? But here's the thing, and I don't think about it because I'm not a ball player, and I'm not required to be keeping up my strength on a busy schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I am, but I live here. I've lived here 30 years. I know what to do on the busy schedule. You know, I know where to go.
Right.
But if you're a new person and the language is something you're not familiar with, and the food is something you're not familiar with, and the schedule is something you're not familiar with, you know, trying to stay fit with food that works for you and works for your schedule and works for your language skills, that is something that can, in Mr. Wheeler's case, can go badly wrong.
Right.
You know, it can cause a, you know, so it sounds humorous or funny, or, you know, it could, in a context, it could be a comedy almost. You know, the guy's career is derailed because he doesn't like, you know, the kind of food, the fast food he gets. But it could be a really big problem. For most of us, no, but for a professional athlete
yes. Yes. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, I did laugh. I chuckled, obviously, when Luis Mendoza said, yeah, the first thing I says, oh, I'm so glad I have a teammate who speaks Spanish, you know. And yeah. I thought, oh, that reminded me of last year when I talked to Guillermo Moscoso of mm-hmm. the DeNA Bay Stars about the importance of being able to speak his native language with his manager
mm-hmm.
While playing here on a Japanese team, and how, you know, breaking down that communication barrier for him made things much more comfortable. So I think that's also going to help Escobar when he has a guy in the bullpen out there when he's warming up or whatever, who can say, you know, this is what's going to be happening, and say it not in English so that he has to think about it in a second or a third language, but in his home his native language. And I thought that was big. But the thing I like, and I love Luis Mendoza, and you can hear it in his voice. I always laugh when I say his name, because, you know, last year he was, well, not last year, I think it was 2 years ago, he started calling himself Ike Mendoza during his, which is, I guess, it's something, if you were to translate it, it would be good looking guy, or hottie Mendoza, something like that is the closest slang I can think of. But he was saying that after interviews. But I just remember sitting down with him. It was his second year, and I was actually at Tokyo Dome, and I had gone there to talk to Brandon Laird. Mm-hmm. And there's Luis Mendoza sitting in front of on the Giants side of the dugouts, on the field, on the first base side.
Mm-hmm.
And he's with a friend of his, and they were just out waiting to get ready, you know, to start warming up. And he's chatting with his friend. And so we shot the breeze for about 30 minutes or something. Just a really down-to-earth guy. He's a really sweet guy, actually.
Yep.
Just a really nice guy. And, yeah, so I didn't, you know, I don't know about how good-looking he is, but he's really nice. And it's fun to talk to him and hear him say these things about, you know, culture and Japanese. And him saying it's easy to adjust to the Japanese culture, I kind of found that shocking. But maybe it was easy for him. But again,
well, he said that before he mentioned how hard it was.
Right, I was going to say, because he said, well, he went on to mention food, language, and you know, how difficult those cultural issues can be. But other than that, it's easy.
Well, yeah, I guess it's sort of like, you know, it's the famous scene from Young Frankenstein, you know, and they're digging graves. What could be worse than this? Because it could be raining. So you could always be worse.
Right.
And obviously, they're doing it on the fighters. And I do think the language is another thing. You know, it's huge. And the other thing about the language, which is, I think, maybe bears mentioning, and I know I'm getting a little pedantic in today, but you know, having somebody who speaks your language, I think sometimes it's not so much about getting advice or exchanging information. It's about having somebody who can listen and really understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it's a comfort level, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, this ain't working for me. But you got somebody who you're not talking to yourself. You know, it's huge having somebody to talk to.
Right.
So, and I think that side of it, and this is why, you know, for Luis Mendoza, it's huge.
Right.
And Edwin Escobar, boy, I almost said Garcia. But Edwin Escobar is there because now they both got somebody to listen to in their native language, and that's huge. So you know, I hope the best for those guys. It's a great trio, and again, fighters are a really good organization. So yeah, good luck, guys.
Okay, and the last thing I wanted to touch on it was in his talk with you, and that was when you hear him say the WBC is the most important tournament in the world. You kind of understand the way other countries feel about it and how absolutely apathetic MLB and its teams and players have been treating this event. But I did look at the U.S. roster, and they have really put together some big name players. So I don't think they're holding back like they've held back in the past, but I still don't think they're hot on it. I think they're a little bit warmer than lukewarm, but they're still not hot.
No, it's not MLB. You know, it's really not MLB because
it's not MLB the organization. I'm sorry, but it is the MLB teams and their
it is owners. MLB teams that wish it would go away.
Yeah,
MLB as a whole, and to me, this is a huge thing that I'm putting in Bud Selig's corner. I don't know if it's worth lifetime, $3 million a year for life or something like that, but it's a tremendously good thing. And I've noticed it with all the teams. When I look at all the teams, I looked at China and I can't say I looked at all the teams.
Well,
I look at the teams, let's put it this way, the teams I do look at, I look at the rosters, and I look at the rosters they've fielded 4 years ago and 8 years ago, and I think, man, this team 8 years ago could have been a champion. You know, I know I'm talking about Mexico. I mean, the Mexican team's really strong, and these are teams that are really good.
Yeah.
A lot of very competitive teams out there, and it's going to be fun. I looked at China. I talked to the China manager the other day. They were very close to getting Colton Wong. They were close to getting a couple of other Chinese-born major league pitchers. They did get one former major league
pitcher. They got Bruce Chen.
they got two former major league pitchers, including Bruce Chen.
Right.
So things are moving along for everybody.
Right.
And it's really getting interesting. So
well, we got to move along too.
We do indeed. If you just push my button and shut me up, then we can move along.
Okay. All right. Let's make a forest team transition and talk about camps here in Japan. Now, I know you went to Okinawa, and the fighters had come back from Arizona, and you got to talk to them, and you got to see Shohei Ohtani, but I have something to say about him before you get into what you talked about.
Oh, go ahead.
With the team.
Yeah, I want to hear what you have to say.
And,
because,
well, then be quiet. You can't hear it if you keep jibber-jabbering.
Jibber-jab. I was not. That was more like just jabbering.
Which you're still doing. So anyway, the team came out and announced that he wasn't able to pitch in the WBC for Samurai Japan. Then Samurai Japan came out and said, well, he's not going to be able to hit, so he can't play, and he's not on the roster. And since that time, the guy with a bad ankle has been working out every day, right? He's been taking swings every day, right? Looks like he's going to play on opening day. We don't know, and I'm just speculating.
It looks like his ankle is going to progress to the point where he can play. He can run. He can run at full speed and be ready on opening day. Yes.
Yeah, I find that odd. That's it. That's all I wanted to say. Now I haven't gone. I didn't go. I didn't get to see him. But it seems like they being Samurai Japan. Where if they weren't going to get him on the mound, he wasn't just going to be a hitter, and they just wanted to send that message, and so that's why he got bounced off the team. But hey, whatever.
Well, I wouldn't put that past Kokubo because.
Well, obviously, I'm not putting it past him.
No, I wouldn't put it. I don't think that's true. I think his ankle is not ready. He is not ready, and I'm less optimistic about his ankle than you are. Now, here's the timeline.
Well, he still has more than a month.
Well,
essentially,
yes and
before
no.
real games start, he can play in the fake baseball, but who cares about those games? It's preseason.
Exactly.
He doesn't have to play.
Right. Well, I'm not that certain he's going to be able to. I'm not certain he's going to be able to even hit on opening day.
Okay.
I'm not certain he's going to be able to run at all this year. I'm not certain he's not going to, the 15th of April, his ankle's still not good enough, and they're going to have to say, sorry, we're going to have surgery, and you're going to be out for 5 months.
Okay, well, when that happens, then we'll understand what's going on in that front. But the way it looks, the way he's hitting, I see highlights every day where he's swinging, and it doesn't look like he's taking any time off to get better. And I did hint about that surgery procedure. That
you did.
But I haven't heard much more about it since then. I haven't watched every report, of course, but the way he's working out, it doesn't seem like they're talking about it.
Well, they're not talking about it because they've made a decision, which is they're not going to have surgery. That doesn't mean he's not going to have surgery. I think, having spoken to my colleague who covers the fighters, that the surgery option was basically thrown out there at the point the WBC became a non-option. But at that point, it was decided, well, it's too soon before the start of the season to be having surgery on something that it looks like he's going to be able to play on. That being said, I think there is a feeling among a number of people that had this not been a WBC year, he would have had surgery a week after the end of the Japan series.
Right.
Now,
yeah.
he said he told me that it was heavily taped he told me he probably shouldn't. He said he doesn't regret it because he thought it was okay. He said sort of like it was what it was, but he said also, and this was my story, that you can't really say no to Japan. And I think but on the other hand, he wouldn't say he regretted the decision. So I don't know quite understand it. But my sense is this: had there not been games, national team games, had there not been a WBC, they would have actually considered surgery. Something that would have kept him out of the lineup maybe until May or something. But now that that's gone, it's too late. It's going to. Pretty much that if he has surgery now, it's probably season-ending surgery.
What is the injury?
Well,
we're not talking about an ankle sprain then.
We are not talking about an ankle sprain. We're talking about two things, and what I've heard, one major league person told me the injury apparently is a bone spur.
I got that.
You do. I know John's got one. And he's got a bone spur, and that's causing, basically keeping it from getting healthy.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So, anyway, so it looks like that's going to be something that's going to happen at the end of the year, is the bone spur. But, on the other hand, if it doesn't get healthy, they're going to have the surgery, you know, when they realize it's not going to get healthy. And he's still not running at full strength. He's taking swings. You know, he's taking baby steps.
Gotcha.
In a straight line.
Gotcha. Stay away from that Cebu Dome staircase hell
and that was the thing, and oddly enough, and I mentioned to him about what Edgar Gonzalez told me about the thing that impressed him the most about Shohei Ohtani was his speed and his base running, and he said, well, I'm glad to hear that, but I don't see how anybody would be surprised by my base running. I could only run flat out in a straight line.
Yeah. All right. So other camp news. The thing that hit yesterday that hit me that was all over the Sports Hochi newspaper was the fact that Giants manager Yoshinobu Takahashi was trying to hit infield for some of his players, and they counted. This is why I don't like spring and camp and all this other stuff, and I call it fake baseball and all these other things, because reporters stand around and count the number of swings the manager hits ground balls to guys during infield. And right. So there were 347 swings. He hit, you know, infield for an hour. And they asked Shuichi Murata, how was the manager? And he said he was not very good at hitting ground balls, you know. Well, that's not news. I don't want to see this.
Well, of course it's not news. Takahashi was a fly ball hitter.
That too. So, and I thought, you know, the whole thing about the Giants for me is, and I'm like, the only thing that's really, I don't know, compelling for me to watch about their camp is that what they have on the infield is just going to be a mess, right? They've got Shuichi Murata, as I mentioned before. They've got Kazuma Okamoto, the guy I've always liked since the day they drafted him. And then Casey McGee, who's in camp, who can probably play first base or third. But, you know, Murata's third baseman. Okamoto, third baseman. McGee, probably best position third base. And then they've got Shinosuke Abe, who's a first baseman. But all the Murata, third base, can play first. Okamoto, I haven't seen him play any place but third base. But I'm sure he could play first if they pushed him over there. And McGee can play both of those spots. But how are they going to use those guys during the season? Who's going down to the minors to start the season? Mm-hmm. It's really going to be an interesting battle there among all those players and just a couple spots. Plus, you know, whatever, somebody might emerge. They might have to put a stick in their hand. I don't know. It looks like a mess. And I don't see Abe catching again, so... Nope. Yeah, this is interesting. Really interesting stuff going on there.
Yeah, I agree with that. There doesn't. It's almost like, the Oryx Buffaloes tried to expel their demons, and somehow they returned to the Yomiuri Giants where they used to live forever. You know, when they, I mean, a lot of you might remember. I mean, every off season was about how many big name players the Giants could get that they had no place to play. You know, one year it was like Roberto Pettigini and Kokubo and Tuffy Rhodes, and man, we're going to have a great team. And it was just sliding down a slippery slope. And I mean, and they were all good players, but they all couldn't play at the same position. They all couldn't play at the same time. And they're going, oh, Pettigini's pretty good in left field. I'm going like, what?
You're pretty good.
You're pretty good. He'd be better than me. Well, I mean, you know, if that was their plan, better than Jim Allen, yeah. There'd be a quarter of Japan's population be out there in left field.
Right, and I was looking at the Dragons because, you know, they've got these practice, they've got camp sessions on TV all the time. So I put the Dragons camp session on TV the other day, and I do think they have this this dynamic offense thing going with Alex Guerrero, a guy who can really hit but has never really been much of a glove man. and he's probably best suited to play third base, and he's really been punching the ball around in camp. I can't believe I'm saying this in camp, but anyway.
It's okay. We got it on record now, so you can move.
Okay,
move
and forward. Then you've got Shuhei Takahashi, who a left-handed batter who has been, you know, trying to break out and take over that position at third base. He's still in the developmental stage, but you bring in Guerrero, now it's a battle. Guerrero's a right-handed hitter. Shuhei is a left-handed hitter. So he has been injured, Shuhei has. Takashi, as I like to call him, he has been injured, and he has his issues in terms of that, not being able to grab that spot. Okay, I like the dynamic with Shige Kazumori, the new manager. I guess he was interim last year. He's going to stay in that role, and he looks good in the role. I think he's very encouraging of his players. I saw him in a practice game the other day. He's very encouraging. Hey, look, you know, you made an out, but you made good contact there. Don't worry about it. We'll get him next time, kind of a guy. So I think they got an interesting thing going. I've been watching SoftBank as well because they're all over the news all the time. They've got Daisuke Matsuzaka, who's still out there, still alive, still kicking, so to speak.
Yes. What was that one? Reports of his retirement are greatly exaggerated.
Well, no, they're not. But he came into camp. He had dropped a lot of weight. I think it was somewhere around the 15, 16 pounds or so. And he had one of those long bullpen sessions too. And he's admitted he's a completely different pitcher than he was before. And then they've been showing the rookie Seiji Tanaka, who's working on a lot of aspects of his form, and and obviously his control is in a state of flux right now because they're trying to get him into using the right form, the proper form, or a better form, or they're working on that. So, you know, SoftBank is a real interesting look. I have seen the Tigers a little bit, but mostly the news there is about Itoi and how they're going to use him. But again, that team has got, they have a lot of battles, I think, for all the positions as they try to rebuild and still compete. But I think they're going to be able to do it just like they were last year. They didn't fall out of the race, really, until the end. So I think they'll be the same kind of a team this year, but they'll have a little bit better, a little bit more experience, I think. So that'd be interesting. And then the Bay Stars, Skipper Alex Ramirez has some rookies whom he seems to believe are going to impact his roster decisions this spring. And so I'm being a little bit loose with the language, calling it spring, but
John, our listeners are comfortable with you being loose with language, so we'll just move on with that.
Okay. Well, I'm curious though how the WBC is going to have some impact on some of these teams as they go through their preparation, because some players are going to, when the Samurai Japan camp, when they pull those players out away from their MPB teams, that starts on the 23rd, right?
The guys are leaving and joining Samurai Japan on the 22nd. They start practice on the 23rd,
right? So they're going
to pull through Sunday. So Monday's going to, excuse me, Wednesday they're going to assemble in Miyazaki for a brief training camp, and they'll have one practice game against the SoftBank Hawks in Miyazaki, who also train there. Then they'll have two games starting on February 28th in Fukuoka against Taiwan, who are in Pool A, and then they move on to Osaka. So what's up with these teams? Sorry to go overly long there, but yeah, what's up with these teams? What's gonna impact them? There's some teams that have a lot of players on the roster.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's just gonna really be headaches for some of these managers, because I think somebody's gonna stand out and do well, and while some of the regulars are gone, but they're not gonna be able to earn a roster spot and be sent to the farm, and then, you know, what does that do to them? Whether they're young guys or old guys, it's obviously a mental hurdle you have to overcome, being sent down to the farm and not earning a spot at the camp. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it'll be interesting to watch that stuff. And I will be doing that because I won't be with any of the Samurai Japan stuff.
Yeah, well, that's the same here. Just watching it from afar, you know, and saying, wow, boy, I was in Osaka.
Right. So speaking of Samurai Japan, making a seamless transition, I want to talk about the things I've been seeing from Hiroki Kokubo these past 2 weeks.
Seen, have you seen anything from him? I mean, other than like, I mean, seen anything? Okay, let's put it this way. Have you seen anything positive?
No, anything positive?
That's,
no.
That's what I thought too. I mean, I'm just going like, how much dumber can this get?
Exactly. I mean, are they figuring out, are they just saying, hey, look, we don't think we have a chance to win, so let's try to do everything we can to sabotage this thing and get out and get the players back to MPB and make our money. You know, MPB is running the team, right? It seems. And we want our players back here in Japan, and we want to make money here. I mean, you've got the best defensive second baseman in the history of NPB, and, you know, your record showed it, Jim Allen. You did the work last year, and you said he made the most outs in a season, two consecutive seasons, right?
Well, he's had...
This is, I should mention his name, this is Yosuke Kikuchi of the Hiroshima Carp I'm talking about.
I'm talking of, okay, in assists, it was
500, I think.
I was going to say it was 500. Mm. Yeah, the only player in Japan to ever have 500 assists in a season, and he's got two of them.
Right.
And his third best season is the fourth best one in NPB history.
So we're going to take that guy out of second base, or off the second base position, and we're going to put somebody who's not bad. Tetsuo Yamada is not a bad second baseman.
I would say he's a good second baseman.
No, you know, he's a good second baseman. I'm not saying he's not capable. He's not maybe overachieving even at this position. But I'm not taking the best guy I've ever seen or the league has ever seen and replacing him at second base, and then moving him to third, you know, I would find, I don't know. And then you've got,
we got reports that
Shogo Akiyama, who's supposed to be the best center fielder they have, mm-hmm. is working out in left and right field too, because they might put somebody else in center, and I can't imagine who it's going to be.
You can't. Boy, I think his initials are N-A.
Yeah, I think so too, but you wouldn't start him there, would you?
Well, if you're Kokubo, you might. Think of it that way. What would Kokubo do?
Cuckoo.
What would Kokubo do? Kokubo would say, replacement pool pitchers? I don't need any stinking replacement pool players. I don't care if somebody's lame. I want them on the team to show my support.
All right, we've got to explain this. The replacement pool pitchers, what was it, a number of 10?
Okay, basically... A new rule this year in the WBC was made so that, and I'm taking this as the way the WBC normally works. They rig the pools, so after the first year of the WBC, when the United States failed to reach the semifinals because they were in the same pool with the two finalists, they were in the same half of the bracket with the two finalists.
Mm-hmm.
They removed the USA from that pool with the two finalists. They took one of the other final round teams, Cuba, and then put them in the same bracket with Japan and Korea so that the US could finally make the semifinals in 2009. You know, they keep doing this, and this rule was essentially made so that the United States could try to encourage Clayton Kershaw and Madison Bumgarner to agree to pitch in the final round for the United States. So they made a rule that you could add a selected pitcher after two of a group of selected pitchers after every round.
So would it be, you have to select these pitchers ahead of time. So let's say you've got, correct, what is the group, is 10?
Is 10. And so of those 10,
you name 10 pitchers who will essentially be alternates, but they can come in after a particular round, but only,
right,
only they can only come in. It's just like they're treating it just like a baseball team, so a right, baseball game. If you come out of the game, you're out for the rest of the game.
Correct. And two of the 10 have to be on your active roster to start the tournament. They have to be active for the first round.
Right.
Okay. So now here's the thing. So Hiroki Kokubo then says, I don't want to use...
try not to laugh.
It's hard not to laugh.
I mean, you're going to make me laugh.
Because I asked him, he was at the Bay Stars camp last Sunday, and I asked him about his logic behind this, and he didn't...
Logic?
Yeah, I know. That's what he said. Logic? What's that? Anyway, he said, yes, Well, okay, my problem with the whole thing was, now he named one player, Yoshihisa Hirano of the Oryx Buffaloes, has his active member of the designated pitcher pool. Now, this did nothing to his team. He was already active on the roster. All it means is that now, should Hirano suddenly forget how to throw a baseball, or let's say his forkball, his splitter just ain't working.
Right.
Or something, he doesn't have a feel for the ball. His arm gets, I don't know.
Yeah, we got it.
Or something. Okay, so he's not effective. He's fit, but he's not effective. And maybe he gets bummed out after he gets shelled in a game and he's no longer good. So, okay, let's change him for another player. Well, you can do that because he's one of the designated pitchers. You can take a guy out who's not injured. You can replace any player on your roster who is injured.
And how many does Kokubo select?
One.
So you can have as many as 10, and two have to start out in that first round as players. So that means you have eight in reserve.
Well, pitchers. He selected nine. I believe he selected nine because he picked Hirano and eight guys on the other list. Nine was the maximum he could pick because he said, well, I don't care about flexibility. I don't care about strategy. I care about telling my guys that I care about them and I trust them to get the job done.
That's so touching and beautiful.
It's a small thing because, you're guessing one of these guys is going to be more likely to be needing to be changed out when he's not hurt, and it's a small thing. But so there's that. The other thing was that, and I think this is unfortunate, but the Samurai Japan management, NPB, wasn't quite sure of how the rule worked because they wanted to select nobody.
Great.
They wanted to select nobody because Kokubo said, I don't want to use the rule. I don't want to switch out a guy who's not hurt.
We're good.
And that exactly. And that's, that is what it is. But here's the point, that they didn't quite understand the way the rule worked. It wasn't clear to them. And it wasn't made clear to them long in advance of the tournament. So they were so curious to see the rosters other teams picked because they wanted to see, was there a team that didn't pick anybody? Because they thought essentially they had to pick one person. Oh, okay, we got to pick Hirano. So let's tell him we don't mean anything by it.
All right, so I can just see in a game that, has Norichika Aoki starting in center and Shogo Akiyama starting in right and Ryosuke Kikuchi at third base and Tetsuto Yamada at second and
Well, hold on, just a second. I have 2 cents.
I have so, 2 cents.
So, okay, I'll give you my 2 cents, John Gibson. So I understand the Kikuchi thing. I understand it because the feeling is Yamada is not going to be able to adjust to playing another position at all.
I figured that, but yeah.
And he's probably on that team, he's basically the second best hitter on the team, I would think, after Yoshitomo Tsutsugo. Now,
I would say he's the best hitter on the team, but
okay, he might be.
It's a close race. Yeah, you got one from the left side now, and one from the right side. Yeah,
right.
I understand.
But I think he's very good, and I think he's very good, and he's basically the future elite. He and Ian Tsutsugo are both there, and you want him to be effective, and you don't want him to be worrying about his defense. Whereas Kikuchi is, on the other hand, you're saying, you can do anything. And with Yamada, I think the answer is obvious. I mean, he played for Samurai Japan at first base against the major leaguers and in the Premier 12 a little bit. I wouldn't mind having him at first base.
I understand the move from that perspective. I kind of felt that way myself. I'm like, well, where else would you put Yamada? Are you going to put him in the outfield? Or are you going to shove him somewhere? Because you don't want to DH him, because I think Uchikawa is going to DH. So I understand the move, but I just wouldn't do it.
I think Nobuhiro Matsuda is done. I think I'd rather have Kikuchi play third base than Matsuda.
All right.
So, okay, right. Anyway, that's my two cents. Okay.
All right. And with that, we'll go to the last item on our agenda, which is the rule change that we just wanted to discuss. And I think there were a couple of rule tweaks, but this one was the one that caught my eye. And this is the rule at second base. And basically, I think I've informed listeners before that a lot of times MPB likes to mimic MLB. And I told you that this slide rule at second base was going to come into play in NPB, although I didn't think this league needed it. But probably it's better to have it defined in black and white and have it in the rule book than to not have it in the rule book and have managers like Kimiyasu Kudo arguing about it at Tokyo Dome when it really wasn't a rule, so he didn't really have any grounds to argue. But so, to have it, it's better to have it down in black and white so everybody knows what the rules are. And under the rules, that as I understand them, I didn't read it in completely. And that's, you can blame that on the Twins. They've been letting me sleep, but that's about it.
What have you got against Minnesota?
my Twins.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought there was something like you were up late at night watching the Twins, you know, checking on the Twins pitchers and catchers or something.
Right. No, my two little ones. Basically, it's what I said before, how I explained the rule is slide like you want, like you're trying to be safe at second base. Your intent is to be safe at the base at second.
Yep.
If you're sliding too late, you're going to go past it. If you're too wide of the bag, you're not going to be able to reach it. So slide as if your intent is to arrive at second base, not go past it, and I think everything else will be fine. And get down and get out of the way.
Yep, I think the rules, of course, they're saying slide straight to the bag, but what they mean also is you can slide straight to the bag, but if somebody's there trying to tag you, you can slide around it. You know, you can hook slide, you can go past, you know, you can go past the bag and hook slide, but you're sliding away from the defender, not sliding around the bag and into the defender. There's somebody I can knock over.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of baseball people hate it, but you know what? A lot of baseball people hated the collision rule, and they were very vociferous about it until basically for about a month. And then they went like, you know, all the big tough guys who were worried about their reputations as tough catchers, you know, I'm going to break this rule every time, and they're going to have to throw me out of the game. How many collisions did we have in MLB, in that time, in 3 years? Basically, one, two.
Yeah, very few, yeah.
Yeah, so good thing. I mean, it's really a good thing. It hasn't slowed the game down. I mean, the enforcement slowed the game down, but the rule hasn't slowed the game down. It's, I'm good with that. I mean, get used to it.
Yeah, my opinion on the whole thing is, hey, don't hit the ball on the ground and hit into a double play in the first place if you can control it. If you do that, just, you know, go on to the next inning. You know, don't try to take somebody out. That's my opinion of it. I don't think everyone wants to play that way. But
I think you need the rule because as long as it's an option, it gives somebody who needs to win the option of hurting their, you know, injuring an opponent for the sake of winning.
Chase the leg crusher Utley.
Yeah, and if it allows you, then you essentially, you're put in a position where in order to help your team, you have to injure an opponent. And as long as the rules allow you to do that, people are going to do it. No one's going to be happy about it, but it's, as they say, clean baseball because it's in the book. But I think you don't really want that. I mean, part of the game? It was, but it didn't never need to be.
Right. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. If you want to send us questions, which we, you know, love to get, and we love to get the MP3 questions as well, send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. You can hit us on Twitter at JBWPodcast.
Just don't hit too hard.
Don't hit too hard, and hit us with a hashtag high heat, but don't hit us too hard.
No.
Or you can go to the Facebook page and leave us a comment there and look for us on iTunes.
All right, thanks for listening.
So enjoy your baseball.